The Hope of Rabbits, A Journal of a Writer's Week. Hedgebrook is a writer's retreat with a difference. It accepts only women. As Gloria Steinem said of it, it's not a retreat, it's an advance. Gender segregation, like any segregation, is open to question as to its motives. I attended a women's college that was embedded like a seed pearl in a gigantic male oyster. I taught at Mills and Bennington, and many times at the great writing workshop, The Flight of the Mind, and I attended or taught at many mixed-gender schools and workshops. My judgment is based on experience. I hold it self-evident that so long as we live in a man's world, as we still do, women have a right to create enclaves of learning or work where, instead of obeying or imitating what men do and want, women can shape what they do, how they do it, and why they do it, in their own way and on their own terms. No enclave is the whole reality. No exclusivity is entirely rightful. But when a great injustice prevails, any opportunity of counteracting it, undoing it even temporarily, is justified. Intellect and art have been so wholly owned by men, and that ownership so fiercely maintained, that no woman can assume society will simply grant her a rightful share in them. Many women still find it difficult, even frightening, to name themselves thinkers, makers, to say I am a scholar, a scientist, an artist. A place where such fear has no place, and a period of time given purely to doing one's own work, is for many men a perfectly reasonable expectation, for many women an astounding, once-in-a-lifetime gift. The six cottages of Hedgebrook, in a beautiful farm and forest on the coast of Whidbey Island, north of Seattle, have offered that gift to many of us. If you want to know more about it, the website is hedgebrook.org. I was kindly invited there over 20 years ago to come for a month. I chose to go only for a week. I had never been at any kind of writer's colony before, never wanted to. A room of my own in my own house had always seemed quite enough. But I was curious, now, about what this one would be like, and the timing was good. I had been having intimations of a new story that felt as if it might be a long one, a novel, or at least a novella. What would it be like to work on it all day, every day for a week, without any distractions, without grocery shopping or house cleaning or making dinner, alone for 20 hours a day or more? What follows is the record I kept of what it was like. This diary and the novella were written in bound notebooks, possibly the last long pieces of prose I composed entirely by hand. I don't want to rant about the suppression of teaching cursive writing in American schools, but I'm very glad I was taught it. Remembering writing outdoors at Hedgebrook and elsewhere, I think about the humane pace of longhand, and how one is constantly looking away from the notebook at things around it, near or far, changing position as one sits, doodling in the margin while working out a transition, half-consciously noticing the slant of the sunlight, the advance of shadows, the color of the sky, fully absorbed in the work, and yet open to the surrounding world as we are not when working at a computer screen. A good pen or pencil and a well-made notebook are a genuine climax technology. Simple, sustainable, fixable, lasting, and extraordinarily adaptable. It seems a pity to throw it entirely away by omitting to teach people how to use it, simply because a new, wonderful, and infinitely less sustainable technology has come along. I hate to think of a writerly great-grandchild silenced in the midst of a story by the failure of her power source, dumb as an unplugged machine. Well, she'll swear, and find a pencil, and start laboriously printing, and presently reinvent cursive. Nothing, not even our incalculable wrong-headedness, can keep human beings from telling stories. Day 1. 20 April 1994, 12:30 p.m. I am sitting in bright sunlight on the little front porch of Cedar Cottage at Hedgebrook. Linda picked me up at the Alexis in Seattle and drove me here, crossing on the Mukilteo ferry. Silky water. A sea lion catching a fish and then playing about. Fog low on the mainland, hiding the Cascades behind us. But as we approached Whidbey Island, the snowy Olympics stood above the clouds, and there is no fog here on the island. The sun's hot, brilliant on the grass, making the shadows of the trees all round very dark. A tiny, dusty lizard under the porch wants to come out into the sunlight, but is scared of me. I am apprehensive, feeling strange to the place, despite a kind welcome. The usual nervousness about being among people I don't know, forgetting names, being awkward. Plus an unusual apprehension. 7 days with no obligations, no routine, no society except at dinner time. But not exactly vacation days, not holiday. Work days for the real work, without any distractions except those I invent. This is austere, this prospect. A shaker week, silent, celibate. A week of listening where there are no sounds, but the birds and the wind. A test. Will I pass it? Will I be able to keep the wood fire going to keep my cedar cabin warm when the clouds and rain return? Will I be able to keep my own fire going? Not wanting to use this week for trivial pursuits, I did not bring the material for an essay I must write about Cordwainer Smith. Not a trivial writer, but it didn't seem appropriate work for this week. I decided that I should hope to be blessed by a story, and should hold the days free for that. And if I am not blessed, I have several heavy books to read. I will read seriously, I said, not skim and gobble for once. So I have Levi Strauss and Clifford Geertz. Garcilaso de la Vega El Inca and Bernardo Diaz and Sande on gender and Leanne Hinton on Californian languages. Surely enough. For novels, I have only Angelica Herodischer's in Spanish and my Spanish dictionary and Joaquin Miller's Life Amongst the Modocs, which Dan Cromie lent me. I didn't bring anything easy. My choices were stern, austere. Will I be sorry? I brought a tiny sketchbook and colored pencils, but no camera. Nothing easy. Lunch came in a pretty basket, two kinds of pasta salad. Greens would have been nice, and something in the way of juice, but I guess one gets one's own juice and stuff in foraging for breakfast after dinner. Water seemed fittingly austere. But how perfectly beautiful it is, this little clearing of mown green grass ringed in by dark firs and bright new-leaved April-blossoming shrubs and trees. What utter luxury to sit here like a lizard in the sun. 5:10 p.m. A little rabbit, the longest I've ever watched a wild rabbit. I was indoors in the window seat. Brindle brown-gray, with flower dust along the flanks and the white scut elevated now and then, a healthy young rabbit, glossy fur. The great black eyes, light-circled, are still visible from three-quarter back view, so that her elegance can see what's behind her as she grazes in the grass like a nervous little cow. Slender reddish hind legs. She stands, the nose twitching and wiggling, one front paw dangling. She hops on. Tucks her hindquarters under like a cat, like my cat whom I miss. Denise showed me about after lunch, the farm, the paths, and pools. We heard the he-goat scream. Recently he had to have his penis cut off because of bladder stones, and now pees forcefully backwards through a tube. And the vet had to clear the tube, which evidently hurt. Beautiful herb and vegetable gardens, an orchardlet, berry bushes, root cellar, greenhouse, the dream farm. Oh, money, what wonders you perform, and how rarely are you so well spent. Beyond the farmhouse lie the wetlands and useless bay, a most endearing name, and blue land over the water. Part of this, or another island, or the mainland, I don't know. I drew and colored a picture of Cedar Cottage as the ring-encircled sun faded into white sky and the temperature dropped. Now, as the sun crosses my windows to the right behind the trees, it has cleared up again a good deal, but I don't trust it to be fair. Now, westering sunlight shines through the small, young, pale apricot-color leaves of a sapling maple and dapples the grass again. I am in my window seat with a shot of whiskey. Must leave for dinner in a short while. I have read the kind effusions of women who have stayed in this cottage in the record books kept here. I felt somewhat unworthy, cynical, bad. We women do work so hard at keeping the weaving from unraveling. A rabbit just traversed the grass in a charming loping hurry. Same one? Only rabbits know. 8:20 p.m. Dinner at the farmhouse table. Rice and beans, cottage cheese and fruit, a lovely mushroom phyllo triangle, and green salad, wine and coffee, with the other residents, one young and black from Brooklyn, one from Calcutta, one native Hawaiian, one young and Asian American, and Linda the manager, and Nancy Nordhoff the founder. Laura cooks, eats, serves, clears. One resident is away. I walk the paths after a tiny spatter of rain, first north to a lovely black pool and along the east perimeter, to the supply house where I called Charles at home, then on round the northwest perimeter, back to the black pool and home. It is strange. There are so many paths, and between them the forest is so thick, evergreens and currant and salmonberry and a laurelly tall shrub with white panicles. Elder, that's what it is. I thought at one moment of the Sleeping Beauty's hedge. The red salmonberry flowers nodding down from high above me on their thorn-furred stems. Yet it is all within a fence, and all only 33 acres. You can get lost and never be lost. It is dreamlike. The little cottontails are everywhere, quite fearless. A great contestation of crows above my roof broke up at my approach, swooping off blackly. Twilight now, and nearly clear. Very still, evening bird remarks. The white, sweet clove-scented, ball-shaped flower clusters of the shrub just facing the window-seat windows grow whiter as the light fades. Day 2, 21 April. 11:45 a.m. I hope to rise at dawn, but lay instead till 7:30 in the broad loft bed as the day brightened in the beautiful arched window with its tulips of colored glass. I sought my story. I did Tai Chi. I made my breakfast of granola, banana, and orange juice, and tea, and ate it in the window seat, which is where I think I will spend the week. I didn't bring the laptop because Charles wanted it for the coast, and because I decided I didn't want the baggage of it, either physical or psychic. I brought 3 notebooks, this being one of them. I'm glad I did, so that I can write in the window seat with the triple window all along beside me to the right and another narrow light at my feet, so I have the sky and trees, the white-flowered shrub, a fine romantic stump sheltering a rhododendron, and always the hope of rabbits. After story planning, I leapt up to walk before the rain. It threatens, though blue patches still show. The wind is strong in gusts from the south, not cold. I haven't yet lighted the wood stove. I went down past the waterfall pond and round by the goats, whom I gave a twig a piece of elder, which they stood up politely for, gazing from their goat eyes. Walked west along the Millman Road to where it rises to Double Bluff Road, the only route down to the beach. A goodish walk, it must be. I hope it doesn't rain so I can't walk, as I love that alternation of riding and walking. I found 2 fine stones on the roadside among many pretty granites and interesting composites and generally good pebbles. And a tuft of rabbit fur by the farm driveway. A hawk at dawn. Came home by the pond with its lovely bronze statue of 2 otters under a great dark cedar, 2 white seashells in the leaf mold, an offering surely. 5:30 p.m. Scribbled story, sun came out. I took off sweater, moved out onto porch. Mowers mowed lanes of grass down vistas of forest. I drew the blasted stump that leans so picturesquely in the southeast of my window seat view. I drew it sitting on the same hummock, or tussock, that I drew the house from. I scribbled more. The sun went in, and so did I. Now have read some more Levi Strauss and sewed a little on my difficult membranes, birds, and geometries, having some whiskey. I wait for rabbits. Only flies come. But a fine young coppery-colored lizard came out from under the porch and glared balefully, fearlessly at me, just as I went in. This must be the lizard Denise inquired after. It has a fine new tail. The one I saw yesterday was dusty and a bit scrubby-looking. It had lost its tail and was very small. This one was maybe 4 inches long. Well, maybe 3. Day 3, 22 April, 7 a.m. By going to bed at 9:30, I woke up at 5:30 and listened to the birds' dawn chorus, not numerous but sweet, and saw the treetops in the charmed magic casement. So I was up before 6 and, finding it clear, the brightness showing through the trees behind the house, went out with my boots on. It rained a little in the night and the dew is very heavy, and did Tai Chi exercises on the only flat bit of cedar houses clearing, and then went walking, thinking it would be fine to see the black pond at the break of day. I wandered a while before I found it. What it is, east and north of the house, is a labyrinth, a true random one, where all the paths lead into other paths and branch away from them and reconnect. A rabbit started me on my wanderings, a fierce, brave rabbit, as in Beatrix Potter. It really didn't want to run away, moving in short, grudging little runs, and then I'd catch up to it again, till finally it left the path in one disdainful lollop over a bush into the darkness of the undergrowth, gone. I finally found the black pond again. I saw my reflection in it, edging cautiously onto moss on the spongy rim, leaning over. Trees and sky reflect perfectly in it, the black water making a mirror. My head was a black, uneven round, featureless. It is an uncanny little pool. I guess it feeds all the other, lower, livelier pools with their waterfalls and duckweed. At dinner last night, A joined us. She had been in town for sonograms of the baby she is carrying. She and B are both black, beautiful, and pretty young. I am by far the oldest. L, who has 4 children in Hawaii, leaves today. As we walked back from dinner and stood at the parting of the paths under the trees, she told me her children's names and what they mean and how they imply the child's destiny, what that child must do in life. It is utterly silent now. This will be a silent day. We don't meet for dinner, but we'll have it brought with lunch, as Laura has to drive 2 residents into town. I will cultivate silence. Maybe I will not cultivate it, but leave it fallow. I'm curious to have a weather forecast, but hate the idea of turning on the radio, spoiling, polluting the pure silence. I only did so once, for less than a minute. 9 a.m. The rabbits use the paths. Should wild things use paths? But after all, they make their own. Why not use ours? 9:30 a.m. A large dark rabbit has made himself guardian of the path to the woodhouse. He sits, erect, or in classic bunny pose, ears erect, motionless, in the middle of the path. Occasionally, he patrols it for a few feet. Then he returns to his post. From the rear, they are like little short-legged deer. The behavior is very like deer. The grazing, the motionless alertness, surveillance. I live with a small predator at home. It is interesting to watch small prey. He's off guard now, grazing just out of the sun near the blasted stump. He doesn't nibble, he grazes. B Big leaves of grass go in very quickly, twitching up and down as he chews, like spaghetti. The light ring around the great dark eye is also deer-like, and the leaf ears. 5 p.m. Unease of the gut and a bad taste in the mouth grew in me today and have kept me close to the cottage and perhaps depressed my mind. I wandered about in mid-afternoon and drew the view south from the largest lowest pond over the cattails to Deer Lagoon and Blue Useless Bay. Then came home and sat out, finishing Levi Strauss, reading a good bit of Geertz and a little Herodischer, and wrote more, on and off, at my story. Very productive and industrious, but lacking vitality and spark. I work as a cow grazes, Keta Kollwitz said of herself when her children were grown. I feel a bit like that, with nothing in my present life but the work. I would, I think, really prefer some regular variety, not necessarily company, at least not of strangers, but of other work, physical work, to cook or clean, or garden or something at a regular time or for a regular length of time, daily. As it is, I walk, but today didn't feel fit to walk far, and so am a bit stale. Being outside ever since 11 in the variable sunny, hazy, breezy, mild day has been very good, though my tail is tired from sitting on the hard porch. Both lizards visited. Dinner will be alone here tonight. I'll try to call Charles, who was out last night. The story, alas, is very slow and circumstantial, probably overly so. I thought it would be nice to write short things, tiny stories, here, but what I have hold of is the tale of a very large, long creature. It seems a mild one so far, a vast lizard. Two walking sticks stand by the door, one just a weathered branch, the other a marvelously polished, dark yellow staff about 4 feet long, tapering, with a few knots, fairly straight. Is it yew wood? The door of Cedar House is of yew, its journal book says. It is also yellowish, incredibly smooth and grainless, very beautiful. Nancy later said the staff was probably rhododendron wood. I suddenly realize that I can get rid of the flies in my window seat windows, which come in the door and buzz and distract me, by opening the windows. The flies fly out. Ma che stupidezza. 8:20 p.m. Two rabbits just outside the window seat window. One has a good sprinkling of white in its fur. I would say an old rabbit. But do wild rabbits get old? The other darker. My guard, I think. Intensely purposeful, the neat, quick, warm bodies move and halt in the twilight grass on narrow, delicate feet. A female California quail was scratching in a ground feeder outside the farm kitchen window when I washed my dinner dishes among house finches, chickadees, sparrows. The graceful, oval body looked quite large among the little birds. She scratched and pecked vigorously. I love to see quail being quail. They are so full of quailness. Day 4, 23 April, 9 a.m. Three great crying geese flew south over the trees, croaking, clanging. 10 a.m. Two deer, following the path from the north, stepping cautious with their delay walk, nibbling shoots here and there, very watchful. I would guess a doe and last year's fawn, brown coats, black tails whisking, the great leaf ears turning and alert, shot through with sunlight, and the chin whiskers full of sunlight. Everyone uses the same paths here. Digestion still off, but improving. I woke at 6 and lay till 7, story dreaming, lazing. Sleep is pure and dark here. Elizabeth passed her exams. I talked with Charles and Theo last night. 5:25 p.m. Wrote till 11, then went down to see about the work party. This is Saturday. They were all about, volunteers, alumni. I joined the weeders in the garden. We cleared a bed of all but a few lettuces and a poppy or two. Then lunch, picnicking about. A lovely day, cool this morning, but the warmest yet, I think. A clear sky till nearly 5. I came back to get my cap and sunscreen. Returned to weed again, the edge of the garden by the fence next to the potatoes. I worked till a bit past 3, with great pleasure in good company, talking about writers, books, and movies. Felt enough was enough and came back and had a good shower in the beautiful bathhouse, and put my dirty, dirty shirt in the dirty clothes basket to take home. I sponged my jeans. They have to last a few more days. Met an alumna and her mother on the path and showed them Cedar House. Sat out and reread the morning's work, too buzzy to write more. Read Herodotus, and started a whiskey at 5. A very good day. I really needed the physical work. How could this be managed at a place like this, so that there was some real work to be done, but only by those who wanted to do it? A garden party, at a certain hour of the afternoon? A list of volunteer jobs kept posted? So that nobody felt obliged but could have a work break if they wanted. It would be difficult to handle. Day 5, 24 April, 11:45 a.m. It began to rain along with dawn, and has rained steadily since. I lighted the stove for the first time, though it's not cold, it's dank, and I wanted the cheer and the bother of it, too. Just relighted it. It lights fast, draws a gale, and eats its little bits of wood like crazy. If I go on feeding it, I'll have to squelch out and get wood today. I'm on page 25 of the story. Thought of calling the book Making Souls, instead of Love is Love. It is as much about religion as it is about sex, if not more. Later, the book this story is in ended up as Four Ways to Forgiveness. Doesn't look like any chance of physical work or walk today, unless I want to get very wet, and then how to dry wet clothes. I think the cabins wouldn't be diminished by a little wall heater, with the wood stove for glory. At dinner last night, Jennifer cooked, with her fat, fair baby Nash replacing Laura. B was there, and a newcomer, returner, L, and J, whom I got to know a little better. She came from another writer's retreat in Texas to this one. I don't know if I like her, but suspect that if I did, I would very much, but it would take a while. Yesterday, A walked back from the gardens with me, and we talked. She is 5 months along and was not feeling very well. She is beautiful and appealing, with a direct, mature sweetness. Day 6, 25 April, 11:45 a.m. The sun gradually came out yesterday. I went for a road walk, east, then west, at 2. I went down and investigated the gate, which my friend Judith said one could ignore the no trespassing sign on, to get down to the shore of the lagoon. There was absolutely no ignoring it. I think the fences have been added since Jay was here. I got quite warm, though it was cloudy. And by evening it was perfectly clear and cooler. At dinner, G from India was still away, which is too bad because she looked so nice. Connie, the gardener, joined us. I liked her. She has gray hair, a bond. B read us a story after dinner, the first time we have stayed together in the evening, a vampire love story, feministically correct, as far as a vampire story can be. A is still not feeling very well. L seems shy but well-disposed. J made a criticism of a word in B's story and then gave way to a charming embarrassment. I can't tell arrogant from shy when they're so young. Or maybe ever. I picked up some nice stones on Millman Road on my walk and arranged them on the big rocks beside my doorstep, where the blue spike flowers, whatever they are, a juga dummy, make such a show and glow of purple-blue that welcomes me through the trees. The bees and bumblebees are always at them. I think, will the next person here like stones? Tried to get to the dark tarn after calling Charles about 8 p.m. Missed it again and again, and then finally almost fell into it. It is a fascinating place, with its black perfect mirror of the trees and sky, and no stir of its surface at all but the slight rings spreading out quick and silent from an insect touch. The night-herd frogs are down at Waterfall Pond. The ducks mostly hang out on those lower, sunny ponds. Black Pond is lonesome. So far, I have finished Levi Strauss, who had a considerable influence on my story. Read parts of Clifford Geertz. Read the Anne Hinton on California and Indian languages. Am avoiding Sanday, which might interfere with my story. Started Garcilaso de la Vega last night. Geertz on common sense is good, and he has far more common sense than Levi Strauss. But L.S. starts the mind, my mind anyhow. He gets wheels turning I didn't know were there. All his mythology, however, seems almost insane to me. The substitutions are like Freudian interpretations of meaning, a series of reflecting mirrors, with no standpoint outside from which to say, hold, enough. Geertz is ineffably Ivy League, a pity. It makes him smart-alecky sometimes, and though he is quite right to point out the curious reversal of fortune in so many academic careers, from the big school as a graduate student to the little school for the career, his assumption that Princeton is paradise is appalling in an anthropologist. I was ashamed to read it. Those people really do believe in the hierarchy of intelligence and merit. I guess they have to. Of course, better scholars are likely to come from the centers of scholarship than from the outskirts. It's a matter of critical mass. But the preening, the snobbery, the prejudice, and the absolute indifference to the fact that, aside from specialized scholarship made available by wealth, there is no difference in the students at all. That's unforgivable in an educated mind. It reveals a deep fault in the education. I suppose that's really why I didn't read the book methodically. I rather dislike Clifford Geertz. I don't like being taught by a snob. Whereas Levi Strauss, for all his touching faith in a good boy's lycée and the École Normale Supérieure, is not a snob, and I delight in learning from him. I can handle aristocrats. I just can't take parvenus. Ha! 5:25 p.m. The curious comparison followed. Geertz is to Levi Strauss as a raccoon is to a unicorn. Well. Lunch was brought in the basket with the pretty cloth by the pretty Jennifer. Her smile is welcome after Laura's overworked look, which makes me feel guilty, though Laura has a lovely smile which I caught a couple of times at dinner, from which she removes herself as much as Jennifer joins in. Jennifer is an easy person. Laura is not. The lunches are a bit odd. A marvelous green salad today, and a vegetable soup made from last night's shepherd's pie with chicken. No bread. Never. Bread is not eaten, and drink is up to you. I have taken to taking an egg and English muffin for my breakfast, and thank goodness Judith told me to bring tea. There's herbals, but no tea at all, only vile decaf. The decaf coffee, on the other hand, is lovely at night after dinner. It went on being nice, and I scuttled off to the ponds and tried a sketch of the far blue towers, which I assume are downtown Seattle, and another one of the reeds in Waterfall Pond. I am nearing the end of my story, which may be accommodating itself to my time here. I suspect it of doing so. But it's 41 pages now and should not go on forever, surely. It leaps about strangely as it is. I think I know what it's about, and then I am not certain. I had some insights when I tried the little low place with its little low window at the east end of the cabin, at the foot of the ladder to the loft, to the right of the door. The woman who showed her mother this cabin on Saturday said that's where she mostly wrote in her cabin when she was here. It seems a bit dark to me, and odd, but it is a good space. From anywhere one gets beautiful views and angles on the rest of the cabin, and the view from there is particularly fine. It just would seem odd to me to stay in the dark, with the window seat offering me all the glade, the trees and sky, and the rabbits. Two last night, very methodical rabbits. One more full day. The test aspect got passed in all senses by Saturday, in the writing aspect by the second day. I feel some lingering reservation, which may well be nothing more than Charles's negativity about my coming here, acting as a drag on me. I think that this is what I think, that this is a wonderful place for any woman who writes. So long as it doesn't replace living in the world most people live in. Puritan. Stupid Puritan. What would men have written in the logbook of Cedar Cottage? I do wonder. The sweet gratitude and pleasure of the women who have stayed here flows like honey from the horn. Take my dear cabin. It is yours, they all say. I was happy. Be happy, they say. I wrote, they say, write. Day 7, 26 April. Noon. Woke and lay and story dreamed till 6:40, got up and wrote and came to an end, which may or may not be the end, of the story I began my first full day here, which I'm calling A Man of the People. Walked up to the dark tarn and round down to the herb garden, where I pencil-sketched Deer Lagoon. It's gray and rather chilly. Last night A, L, and J read their work, and we sat around till past 8 in the farm parlor. B put on her vampire teeth. They were all going to go to the dark tarn to howl at the full moon when it came over the trees, but if they did, I didn't hear them. Later, they all said they did. I was luxuriating in the sleeping loft and had no wish to howl. At 2 this afternoon I had a shower in the lovely bathhouse, that work of art, and coming back spoke to Nancy, who was chopping wood. Linda came by soon after for a cup of tea and to talk about writing something about Hedgebrook, i.e. this journal. We were not very conclusive. At 4 Nancy and Therese Green arrived, and Nancy took us on her woods walk, showing me a couple of amazing places in the labyrinth that I never had discovered or suspected. Some cedars snaking themselves strangely along from a central root source and then rising up straight, and a lovely fir grove. Back by Otter Pond and the great old cedar on the east side of it, to Cedar House. Therese had tea and I had whiskey till we walked down to farewell dinner. Lots of rice and laughing. A gave us all frog stationery she has drawn and printed. So back through the still, mild, chill, gray evening to Cedar House, to pack and sleep one more night. I should think that any stay here would be important in one way or another to most women, and a long stay could be a crossroads to a young woman, an utter blessing to any woman in genuine need of solitude to write or to complete a spiritual passage. My week here, that seemed so long at the beginning, and now seems both very long and very short, the importance of it to me lies, I think now, mostly in the great beauty and peacefulness of the house and the forest and the farm. A place apart, enisled, seclusion, freedom, luxury, rest, and the touching beauty of it above all. If I had not found a story to write, I wonder how it would have been. I worked, the joy of my life. So all the beauty, the sunlight, the rabbits, the deer, the walks, the good fellowship of the younger women, the sweet deep silence of the nights, and the waking to see the treetops through the tulip window of the loft in the first light, all that was gravy. But if I had not been here, in all probability I would not have written this story. It took the whole week, and it was a response to considerable pressure. I am here to write. I brought this empty notebook. I need a story. So Cedar House, Hedgebrook, gave me the story. And the gravy. Treese is to come by to drive me home at 8 tomorrow morning. Ciao, mi casita querida. Acknowledgements. The publication information for the book reviews in this collection is as follows. Margaret Atwood, Moral Disorder, published in The Guardian, September 2006. Margaret Atwood, The Year of the Flood, published in The Guardian, July 2009. Margaret Atwood, Stone Mattress, published in the Financial Times, September 2014. J.G. Ballard, Kingdom Come, published in The Guardian, July 2006. Roberto Bolaño, Monsieur Pain, published in The Guardian, January 2011. T.C. Boyle, When the Killing's Done, published in The Guardian, April 2011. Geraldine Brooks, People of the Book, published in The Guardian, January 2008. Italo Calvino, The Complete Cosmocomics, published in The Guardian, June 2009. Margaret Drabble, The Sea Lady, published in The Guardian, July 2006. Carol M. Schwiller, Le Doit, first published by the Women's Review of Books in 1997, revised in 2002. Alan Garner, Boneland, published in The Guardian, August 2012. Kent Harriff, Benediction, published in The Literary Review, February 2014. Kent Harriff, Our Souls at Night, written in 2016, not previously published. Tove Janssen, The True Deceiver, published in The Guardian, December 2009. Barbara Kingsolver, Flight Behavior, published in The Literary Review, December 2012. Chang Rai Lee, On Such a Full Sea, published in The Guardian, February 2014. Doris Lessing, The Cleft, published in The Guardian, March 2007. Donna Leone, Suffer the Little Children, published in The Guardian, April 2007. Jan Martel, The High Mountains of Portugal, written in 2016, not previously published. China Mieville, Embassy Town, published in The Guardian, April 2011. China Mieville, Three Moments of an Explosion, published in The Guardian, July 2015. David Mitchell, The Bone Clocks, published in The Guardian, September 2014. Jan Morris, Hav, published in The Guardian, June 2006. Julie Otsuka, The Buddha in the Attic, published in The Guardian, December 2011. Salman Rushdie, The Enchantress of Florence, published in The Guardian, Unlimited, July 2014. Salman Rushdie, 2 years, 8 months, and 28 nights, written in 2015, not previously published. José Saramago, Raised from the Ground, published in The Guardian, October 2012. José Saramago, Skylight, published in The Guardian, June 2014. Sylvia Townsend Warner, Dorset Stories, written in 2006, not previously published. Joe Walton, among others, published in The Guardian, March 2013. Jeanette Winterson, Stone Gods, published in The Guardian, August 2007. Stefan Zweig, The Post Office Girl, published in The Literary Review, March 2009.